Thank you very much. Thanks the organizers. What? Okay. I have to confess that this is the second time that I attend not as a speaker this workshop, and it was one of the first one 2 years ago. It was one of the reasons for me to apply for residency fellowship here in Berlin. So here I am. So let's start with timeline. Those dates and information in red is the most important. Thematically, we have a series of earthquakes. Surprise, surprise. We have, of course, Epiphanius, the very famous and patron saint of Salamis. And we have also the issue of the autocephaly, the independent position of the Church of Cyprus. It's an issue starting with, from 431, and it's realized permanently in 488. So that's all. Here, before we start, this is the ancient kingdoms of Cyprus and their attached territory, the main cities, the attached territories, and this organization of the island remains the same until the Byzantine times. Okay, the transition from polytheism to Christianity on Cyprus has never been systematically treated. The only specific study being a preliminary paper by Marcus Rodman, available online. A serious obstacle to this aim is the almost total lack of information about paganism on the island after the 3rd century, and the serious decline of the epigraphic habit, including tombstones, approximately after 300. Of course, inscriptions reappear later, but in a different fashion. As a result, scholars rely too much on the Christian, mostly hagiographical sources, hence minimizing the fact that they give, almost always in hindsight, a one-sided picture of a more complex and diverse reality. Besides, Epiphanius of Salamis' silence regarding the current affairs of his see, despite the great mass of his works that survive, gives the impression that the conversion of the island into Christianity was by the 4th century a fait accompli. In my presentation, I have little choice but being selective, very selective. I will first discuss what we know about the end of public paganism, and then I will try to make sense of the sound of silence with regard to 4th and 5th century polytheism. Then I will focus on Salamis Constantia, seeking to present the profile of the metropolitan city of the island province. In the third part, I'm going to draw some general conclusions about the major characteristics of the new Cypriot Christian culture in the very period of its making. In several cases, I will use the epigraphic material to please you, to bringing out aspects of the history of the island in late antiquity. My views should be treated as a work in progress and preliminary to a more systematic study that is forthcoming on the transition from polytheism to Christianity across the whole island. So the first part, looking at the history of pagan temples and sanctuaries on 4th century Cyprus, we face almost no information after the Severance. It is generally assumed that the important temples of Aphrodite at Palaepaphos, Apollo Hylates at Curium, Aphrodite at Amathus, and Zeus Olympius at Salamis were abandoned as a result of earthquakes in the mid or late 4th century, if not earlier during the 3rd century. Yet, no clear archaeological documentation regarding the end of the use of each of these sites is offered due to the lack of published stratified data and the decline of the epigraphical habit. For example, for the famous Aphrodite of Paphos, Meyer admits that the time and the circumstances of the end of the sanctuary remains unknown, although ancient authors continue to refer to Venus cult and the settlement near the sanctuary continues to prosper until late antiquity. Ammianus Marcellinus, who among our written sources knows the region best, still refers to the temple of Venus in Paphos and that of Zeus in Salamis as characteristic of these cities. He was probably writing in the late 380s and early 390s in Rome, but he last reported residing in Antioch in 372. Jerome, who had also visited the island himself, blames in his Vita Hilarionis the successive earthquakes for destroying the pagan temples in Paphos. He was writing about 390, 392 at Bethlehem, while his account is placed at the time of the arrival of Holy Hilarion in Paphos at about 364. Hilarion took up his secret, his retreat close to the ruins of an old temple in Paphos, Jerome tells us, where he confronted the voices of countless demons. Regarding the sanctuary of Zeus Olympius at Salamis, beside Ammianus, the Emperor Julian apparently also refers to it. You see on the upper left. While in Antioch in 362, he writes about a particular local ritual in which the priests of Cyprus set up common altars to Zeus and Helios. Furthermore, the only attested public statue dedication to Julian from Cyprus is found in Salamis, and it may be connected to a particular favor done by him to the local sanctuary and or the city while he was still residing in Antioch. The available evidence seems therefore to imply that the sanctuary of Zeus could have still been functioning or at least respected as a sacred ground in the 360s, which undermines the theory that Salamis was by and large a Christian city already before Epiphanius. This notion is born out of a hindsight and a highly biased source, that is, the later hagiographical text of the Vita of Epiphanius, written in mid or late 5th century or 6th century, and a conjectural reconstruction of a public inscription by Mitford and Nicolaou from the Gymnasium of Salamis, which, according to its first editors, showed that the Bishop of Salamis, a predecessor of the famous Epiphanius, was Constantius II's agent in rebuilding the ruined city around 346. Although Pouilloux rightly dissociated this text from both Constantius II and the city's bishop, Pouilloux produced the second edition of the inscriptions from Salamis. The by then established view that was never fully refuted and thus continued to inform most accounts of the history of Salamis. A conservative estimate based on all the evidence would therefore place the end of public paganism in Paphos, Kurion, and Salamis in the late 360s at the earliest. Regarding Salamis, the fancy story of the Vita, chapter 94, in which Epiphanius appropriates the treasure of the abandoned temple of Zeus, reminds us of several other contemporary accounts of bishops taking over the treasures and the lands of disused temples, usually after approval by the imperial authorities. In the case of Aphrodite of Amathus, it may be the case that the traditional cult also survived the 3rd century, yet centered not on the Acropolis but in the lower city. It is certain that for Cyprus, as in other places in the eastern Mediterranean, these earthquakes less than a decade apart were a catalyst for the decline of the infrastructure of public paganism. I remind you here of, for instance, Parthenon of Athens, which remained in ruins for more than a century, or the temple of Artemis in Ephesus, which was never repaired. Still, however valid this observation may be, it tells us nothing about the role that local Christians or the imperial authorities may have played in suppressing local paganism. Imperial laws ordering the ban of public worship and the confiscation of temple assets from the reign of Constantine onwards would not have allowed the surviving pagan community to repair and keep up these sanctuaries. With the suppression of public paganism being a piecemeal and long process, pagans had probably enough time to adjust to the new situation, turning to more humble or private forms of devotion. It is therefore right to stress that the archaeology of these urban pagan temples does not tell the whole story, and it should not be used as a barometer of religious change, and this is against the traditional approach to this subject. What can be then said about the last pagans of Cyprus? Recent small-scale archaeological surveys and a few late epigraphic texts seem to suggest that a number of rural sanctuaries also survived in late antiquity. The sanctuary of Serapis, Isis, Osiris, and Eros at the site of Holades at Soloi, of Paphian Aphrodite's consort at Radidi in Paphos, and Zeus Labrenius at the mountainous hinterland of Amathus are the major examples. The late phase of these sites is not devoid of problems regarding the specific dating of inscribed votives and sculpture of a provincial style found there. I refer to them here only to stress that these rural sites should also be acknowledged in such a discussion as presenting an important aspect of late paganism of the island. Equally so, we should take into account the evidence about the worshippers of Theos Hypsistos on Cyprus. A few examples here. So far, 37 dedications, kippi, altars, and plaques to Theos Hypsistos have been reported on Cyprus, mainly from the Limassol and Larnaca districts, and a few examples from Paphos. Their traces cease to be visible with a sharp decline of the sharp decline of the epigraphic culture in the late 3rd century. Nevertheless, we can assume that their conversion to Christianity took longer, as several accounts in Epiphanius and other Christian writers testify to their presence in nearby Phoenicia and Palestine in the late 4th and 5th centuries. Though confusing may be, the views of the Church Fathers cannot be ignored in this case, as Cyprus belonged culturally to the same region. Irrespective of how the cult of Theos Hypsistos attested through the epigraphic data is understood, one can see in them perhaps an interesting facet of the last pagans of Cyprus. One should expect mutations in the beliefs and practices of the Hypsistarians between the 3rd and the 5th century, that is, from being part of a predominantly pagan landscape to a Christianized one after the collapse of public paganism and the gradual radicalization of religious identities. Being viewed as either heretical Christians or Judaizing pagans or Judaizing Christians or even paganizing Christians, see Epiphanius for that, the Hypsistarians may have been not only the result of cross-fertilization between pagans and Jews, but they may have also represented a strategy of survival through dissimulation, an element that was evident in a variety of contemporary texts, both pagan and Christians, and hence the Hypsistarians, the real hipsters of late antiquity. To these thoughts, I should also add a unique example of his Theos inscription from the town of Gogloi. Just to say here that within two wreaths there are the words Theos and Helios. The formulas is Theos and grade is the number, etc., together with the appeal for protection, can be generally found not only in Christian but also in Jewish and pagan contexts. We can understand this prayer briefly for the salvation of all, Βοήθη πάση, in two ways. The sun, being the representation of the cosmic element through which the supremacy and universality of the unknown master god is here articulated. In this case, one can think of the local healing god, a Phoenician Cyprian Apollo, as the implied master god here, or B, as Helios being indeed the recipient of the prayer. And with that, we move to the second part of my presentation. Salamis. The new gymnasium of Roman Salamis was built over its predecessor after the earthquake of 76-77 AD. It consisted of a vast palaestra enclosed by four-sided colonnaded portico and its baths. The baths here, the porticos, and the courtyard. Above the south entrance of the central sudatorium of the eastern colonnade, remains of the original fresco decoration show Hylas, the young friend of Heracles, and a nymph. More pieces of mosaic wall decoration featured mythological themes, such as the slaying of the Neovids by Apollo and Artemis, Zeus and Ganymedes, the river god Eurotas, and more. After the serious earthquakes of the 4th century, the bath sector of the complex was substantially repaired. Karagiorgis, the excavator, assumed that the place remained in ruins for a century. In any case, the porticos were only partially reused, functioning now as a courtyard annexed to the Therme. Recycled material from collapsed buildings was extensively used, while the central pool was built over with a stepped podium that carried a statue column monument, perhaps the emperor. The open courtyard of the baths functioned now as a focal setting of public display for the late antique city, as numerous graffiti and inscription and the inscriptions that remain in situ imply. A series of changes that obviously mirrored the gradual Christianization of the city were now introduced. First of all, the niches and arches of the bath complex, which carried mosaics of mythological themes, were blocked up by walls, apparently with an aim to conceal them from view. You can see these walls here. Elsewhere, the previous wall decorations were covered with plaster. In the fresco figular decoration of the sudatorium entrance already mentioned, a painted inscription was added over the plaster here on it, including the word Kyriou of the Lord. Crosses were engraved on the columns and the walls, among them two acclamations, one to the Bishop Epiphanius, the great star of the city, and another one to Comes Constantine with reference to Theotokos, 5th century. Perhaps. However, part of the previous sculpture decoration of the baths was tolerated, with more pieces being probably added to them after being salvaged from ruined buildings. All the statues of naked male subjects had their genitals carefully removed. The treatment of female naked statues is less consistent and conclusive, yet the symbolic hammering of Aphrodite's naked pudenta is congruent with the treatment of Apollo, set together on the picture. Interestingly enough, the divine attributes of the statues were mostly also preserved. These changes, which do not have to be contemporaneous, cannot be more precisely dated than between the end of the 4th and the early 6th century. Regarding the recycle of the works of sculpture, I would like really briefly to refer to two interesting comparanda from Aphrodisias. On the initiative of the provincial governor Constantius, a monumental statue group of Troilos and Achilles was relocated after repair in the public basilica of Aphrodisias in the mid-4th century, placed together with other mythological imagery of local significance. Moreover, in the conversion of the city's Sebasteion into a retail and manufacture center in the 4th or 5th century, a highly selective and symbolic defacing of its mythological relief decoration, similar to our examples from the baths of Salamis, occurred. In both cases, numerous graffiti indicate the presence of Christians, Jews, and others in the vicinity. Based on the epigraphic material, it can be inferred that the infrastructure of the city of Salamis received further repairs and new construction in the following centuries, in which the ethos of the baths remained a standard yet negotiated feature of the city's life. In fact, the bishop and patron saint of the city, Epiphanius, used in his texts to castigate the use of the bath as a place where the devil casts his deathly nets, and was particularly critical of mixed bathing. If we assume that these changes in the bathing quarters, averting the communication between rooms of similar function, meant to separate people of different sex using the baths simultaneously, and the blocking up of the wall mythological mosaics occurred during his lifetime, the puritanical bishop almost got his own way in this respect. This, however, is far from certain, as a major reconstruction project in the city, including the baths complex, surely took place later, perhaps in the 6th century. A rather relaxed attitude toward bathing and the classical past of the city can be seen in the case of the Bath Cum Reception Hall complex of the local Christian grantee Eustolios ad Curion. Here, Eustolios, a native of Curion, is compared with Phoebus, the previous master of the city. But in the same building, we have this inscription that alludes to Christianity. In place of big stones and solid iron, the house is girt with the much venerated signs of Christ. So Eustolios was a Christian. Back in Salamis, one should here note the group of texts referring to the imperial governor Valerius and possibly his son Olympius. They refer to the decoration of a basilica on top, the repair of the baths and its gardens, and other unspecified buildings. These texts are also important for us as they introduce the use of the symbol of the cross as an official badge in public inscriptions. Here, there, here, there. Their prosopographical identification is problematic and hence their dating. Louis Robert thinks that we should relate Valerius to the reconstruction of the city at the behest of the Emperor Constantius II, but this is far from certain. It is only plausible to suggest that Olympius could have been the son of the Praetorian prefect of the East of circa 430, 431, or 448, which is Pialari and Diochos 7 and 10. Here, the problem is that we have an Adiochos here, we have a Valerius, here a Valerius, and then here an Olympius, son of Adiochos. And is this the same person? Here, Valerius is a typical late antique epigram. Valerius made Cyprus great again, etc., etc. The urban landscape of Salamis transforms vigorously with the construction of two gigantic basilica churches, the so-called Basilica of St. Epiphanius and Campanopetra. The great seven-aisled episcopal basilica of St. Epiphanius was built shortly after 403, also receiving Epiphanius relics. Around 400 meters to the east, Campanopetra was also a grand pilgrimage site erected towards the end of the 5th century. It functioned either, according to Megaud, as the martyrium of Barnabas, or alternatively, according to the site's excavator, as a place of veneration for a relic of the true cross. Unfortunately, no less than 9 lime kilns had later devoured the lavish imported furnishings of its probably imperial-funded decoration. A modest 5th century basilica was also associated with the cult of St. Barnabas, thanks to its acts, presumably after the destruction of the previous building. It is, however, from an unexpected setting that the new identity and cultic landscape of the Christian city is best captured. It's the fresco decoration of a Christian hagiasma, below the birded head of Christ, within a cruciform nimbus and a nilotic scene, a certain Nicodemus invokes the name of Christ and Xavier for his protection. I hope you can read a little bit the text and its French translation. Two biblical extracts from Kings 2 and the 29th Psalm connect the function of the building with Epiphany. Apostle Barnabas, Saint Epiphanius, and the Emperor Constantine are also invoked. The first two are each described as something like our protector, while for Constantine we read, "Help, O Constantine, thou and thy insignia." Nicodemus here clearly speaks on behalf of the community of Salamis, referring to the two patron saints of the city, to whom also the two gigantic basilicas of Salamis were dedicated. The presence of Constantine is nevertheless surprising, and one would be tempted to see this reference as being of local significance. It was neither his son, Constantius, the alleged refounder of Salamis after the 4th century earthquakes, nor Saint Helena, who, according to late Byzantine tradition, visited and endowed the local church on her return trip from the Holy Land. In any case, a late 6th century pilgrim visiting Salamis on a trip from Constantinople to the Holy Land names the tomb of Epiphanius as the landmark of Constantia. In the early 7th century, St. John the Almsgiver, an Amathusian by origin, visits Salamis to venerate the relics of Apostle Barnabas and the thaumaturg Epiphanius. He would be later buried next to the miraculous tomb of St. Tichon in his hometown. The rivalry among cities over the cult of local saintly bishops comes up as the new Christian identity of Cyprus. A major vehicle for that is the production of hagiographical lives from the 5th to the 7th century. It can be divided into two main categories. Saintly bishops of mainly the 4th and the 5th century, Epiphanius of Salamis, Tichon of Amathus, Pyridon of Trimithus, and more are added later on, and bishops of the apostolic age, which are usually connected to the travels of St. Paul and St. Barnabas. Eusebius of Soloi, Heraclius of Thamasos, and more. Many early Christian basilicas and martyria were apparently built to house these cults. No less than 9 Christian buildings are dated as early as the late 4th century across the island. Just give the names: Agios Pyridon at Trimithus, Agios Heraclius at Thamasos, Agios Eusebius at Soloi, the Tumbalus and Christopolitissa Basilicas at Paphos, Ahiropoeitos at Lambusa, the Limeniotissa and Nymphaeum Basilicas at Kurion, and Agios Tichonas at Amathus. While on the subject, note here that this group of Christian monumental architecture for an eastern province of low importance is remarkable in terms of both chronology and monumentality. This impressive number of ecclesiastical sees, 15 around 400, and their apostolic pretensions were necessary to sustain the claim of ecclesiastical autocephaly, beside, of course, the miraculous discovery of the relics of St. Barnabas. Parallel to this city-based rivalry, a particularly pan-Cypriot identity was also emerging as a result of the autocephaly of the Cypriot Church. This can be seen crystallized here in a series of 11th and 12th century frescoes of Cypriot churches depicting all these Cypriot saintly bishops side by side, a Cypriot dream team made of many of these early Cypriot bishops. I will finish my paper with a 5th, 6th century prayer published recently and found in Thamasos. As you can see, it's not properly edited yet. For it gives us a fascinating snapshot of a well-Christianized culture from an inland region of the island. In the text, very briefly, we can read an invocation to God against the evil by Epiphanius and Georgios, a reference to the miracles of Jesus Christ when he blessed the loaves of bread, when he blessed the water and produced wine at Cana. Then God is called to extend these blessings on the vineyards and the crop and prevent from various evils. Then the invocation, here, line 6, is extended to several saints, generally venerated ones, such as Bishop and Martyr Cyprian of Carthage, the early martyr Polycarp of Smyrna, and St. George, but also to at least 2 Cypriot saintly bishops, Epiphanius of Salamis and Theodotus of Cyrenia. Thank you.
Need more than one coffee and one bottle of wine.
Yeah, that's right.
So, please comment. And
you're looking at I come closer. Huh? It will be.
So I find very interesting. I find the inscription from Golgoy Atieno. So you prefer Megisto or Megistato, so there are different readings. Mm-hmm. And there, so we know that there was a cult already before, already in the 4th or 3rd BC, century BC, with the same kind of ex-votos. in anatomic, so anatomical parts, no shape. And so it's, it is very interesting because you have inscriptions for a not defined deity in the 4th and 3rd BC. And then the same kind of ex voto for Theos Ipsistos in imperial time.
Gongoi, we have both texts for Theos Ipsistos and this is Theos unique example. We have both.
Yeah.
And we know that the Apollo there was a kind of a master god because it's represented, is depicted throned, and also in a syllabic inscription is called master, Megistos. So there might be a kind of continuity of a master god locally, so that's why.
Yeah, but there is one who is not yet so is not named in the inscriptions in the Hellenistic and 4th and 3rd BC in that place. Asca in the area around Golgoi, for example.
We have many figurines.
With anatomy.
Like
so the in the shape of eyes, ears, and other anatomic parts.
We have also this category,
So there are two series distinguished by Masson and Hermary and discovered in different museums. So one in the Metropolitan Museums, a couple in Louvre, and then in the River Pit Museum in Oxford. Yeah. Thank you for this wonderful presentation.
So I must explain two things. First, we are working in Inscriptionis Graecae on a new corpus of Cyprus. So Daniela Summa is responsible for the alphabetic inscriptions, which of course has something to do with Christianity, and our colleague Artemis Kanava for the syllabic inscription, which has nothing to do with Christianity, of course. And the second, we spoke 1 hour before about our next conference, and I think the to be one of the subjects, Cyprus.
Good choice.
Okay, more.
Thank you, Yorgo. I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the impact of pilgrimage traffic that Cyprus would have benefited from on the construction of churches and Christianization processes on the island.
Yes, I gave a few examples of pilgrims visiting Salamis, for instance, and we have many reports, a handful of reports from the fifth to the seventh century until the Arab invasions, but later on of pilgrims visiting Cyprus and especially visiting these holy bishops. So these names I referred to earlier. So it's quite clear that the pilgrimage is centered on these patron bishops of the fourth century, and the two apostolic saints, let's say, Barnabas and Eusebius. Yeah.
I'd love to know about Spyridon, if you think there's any
Spyridon.
Evidence for him being a patron of sailors or a particular of interest to travelers before his relics go to Constantinople.
Well, he was visited as as a focus of a pilgrimage, but I haven't gone through his life. So I cannot tell you if there is something more specific about the kind of pilgrims that he attracted. I cannot answer.
Yes, I just want to check it with you. It's always said that in the second century we have this.
Which century?
In the second century we have this almost pogrom against the Jews.
Yes.
Is there no evidence that of Jewish civilization after that?
Well, we do have according to the corpus of Jewish inscriptions, the earliest attested after the temple destruction, etc., is in the 4th century. But it's a matter of identity and how they show their identity. In the same period, I believe that the Jewish element remained in the island, although this description that they were forced away, and everybody who approached the coast of Cyprus, every Jew who approached the coast of Cyprus was killed. But I believe that they remained, as they remained in Galilee or in Palestine, but we don't get any information about them for 2 centuries. So if they remained in areas where Jews were more areas that were more densely populated by Jews, and we don't get any information about that, it may be the same for Cyprus. And of course, all this playful thing with Theos Ipsistos and this Theos, perhaps there might be a Jewish element there undercover.
Okay,
thank you
again. Now we make a big step to the other end of this Antiquus.